Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AMAA, Martial Arts Masters, Blog Talk Radio Show, hosted by the American Martial Arts Alliance, dedicated to building the awareness of professionalism in the martial arts through martial arts management and student development.
Hello, everyone. This is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen, and welcome to another amazing program that we have to offer. We're getting ready for an amazing event coming up in Las Vegas, and one of the people that we're going to be honoring is Benny Artidez. And so we're going to be having him today talk about his life, about the martial arts. We've been talking right before the show, and just so much information. I remember watching his fights on television before I got involved in the martial arts. It's hard to believe that here it is 40-some years later, I'm actually having an interview with him. Saw him up in New Jersey a few weeks back, and, you know, totally fantastic person, great model for what I call, you know, our martial arts legend, and he is truly a martial arts legend with all of his accomplishments. You know, if you don't know who he is, really go to YouTube, you know, get his books, go to his website, because we're really talking about what it is to be a real pioneer in the martial arts, you know, how to be able to make a way when there is no way. We're not just talking about tournament sport karate. We're not just talking about kickboxing. All those things are here. But we're talking about those people that were back in the creative stage to make things happen. Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Jesse. You know, it is great to actually be talking to you. It was great seeing you, you know, at the event. But thank you for having me on the show.
Well, sir, you know, I mean, it's, again, you know, I say this is an honor because, you know, the things that that you have done, you know, if you hadn't have done it, then our conversation today could be totally different. But, you know, to you and your family and, you know, the number of people that have sort of been schooling me, Professor Gary Lee, schooling me about you and all the things I don't know. So I've been trying to do my homework online and going in there and sort of finding out things I don't know that I really want to talk about. So what I'd like to do, you know, we always talk about, you know, the legends in the martial arts and what they do. You know, you're a six-time world kickboxing champion in five weight classes. You know, you're one of those guys that were there when we didn't, you know, when we, after we got some gloves, I guess, and stopped doing the bare knuckle thing, you know. You know, you were there actually doing that, and what you had about 27 years in the fight career, you know, that's pretty fantastic. Let's start there and talk about, you know, why did you get involved in the martial arts? How old were you? Let's start from the beginning.
Okay. Well, in that case, at the age of 3 years old, I had boxing gloves. My father was a boxer. My mother was a professional wrestler. Now, how they got together, heck if I know. But so I was already, my brothers and us, we were competing and learning. So at the age of 5 years old, so actually in 58, I started competing in boxing. And then 60, I started judo. And I started competing in judo. And then in 63, I started Kempo Karate. And from Kempo Karate, my brother loved the hard style. My oldest brother, Arnold, there's 9 black belts in my family. There's 4 champions in my family. And people always just say, well, what do you do? I say, we kicked it around, you know, you know, just for entertainment with each other. But all my family are involved into the fight game. And actually, my sister, Lily, and myself and Blinky, we actually started the sport of kickboxing. So when I say started, back in all the way up until from 63 and 64, I started at the internationals. I started competing, and then in 60, I seen Bruce Lee. he came in and did a demonstration. Now, my mother is very spiritual. My mother used to talk about internal power, internal understanding, and I never understood what she said. But I was at the Nationals, and I was about 5 feet where Bruce Lee was actually talking about the internal power with a four-finger strike. And he had this guy about 250 pounds holding a plate, an iron plate, you know, a weight plate on his chest. And so he had his fingers on it, and he was talking about how he generates his internal power and this. And I was about 5 feet away with my legs crossed, and I'm listening to him because my mother used to talk about it, and that's why my ears opened up to what he was saying. And he went, ooh, and he hit this plate. This guy goes 4 feet back, hits a chair, goes over the chair. I jump up. I said, I want to do that, you know. So I told my brother, my oldest brother Arnold, I said, can I spar with him? And he said, you don't have enough experience. So in that case, from that point, I started every tournament there was, and I was beating. I was beating every tournament there was. And I told my brother, can I spar with him now? He said, you don't have enough experience. So in 68, 69, Elvis Presley started a team, and so a national team. And everybody was fighting for this to be on this team. So I don't know how many people I fought from around the States. And I was the youngest one on the team. And so I was on the Elvis Presley team, and we went to Germany, and then we went to England, and then we went to Belgium. And so when we went to Belgium, because I'm the youngest and the smallest, they're all saying who's gonna fight Donovan. And Donovan is the strongest and the leader of the Belgium team. And I said, I'll fight him. So they all looked at me, being the smallest, and they looked at me and said, okay. In other words, they looked at me like I'll be the sacrifice lamb. And so I went out there, and I beat him. I beat him, and I kicked him to the thigh. He went on the ground. I went over there, and I rubbed his legs because I didn't want it to stop. Everybody was laughing. I had no idea what I was doing. I just didn't want it to stop. I was so excited. So I beat him with no problem.
Wow.
And then I shouldn't say no problem. He was tough. He was tough. So I take that back. But I did beat him. And we went to England. I came back and I told my brother, now can I fight him? I like to spar with Bruce Lee. And he said, I still don't have enough experience. So I started boxing professionally because I wanted to show my brother that I deserve the right to spar with him. So I started sparring, and I was competing. And then in 73, I was just turning pro, and full contact karate came in. And I said, what the heck, full contact karate? And they said, well, it's karate to the knockout. And the first thing I said, I won't get disqualified. And they said, no, it's to the knockout. we went to Hawaii. And it was a two-day tournament. The first day, I stopped seven people. And so the first time I knocked him down, and he was out. He couldn't continue. I looked around. I said, oh, I'm going to get disqualified. And they raised my hand. I said, all right. I didn't get disqualified. So I stopped everybody on Saturday, and then Sunday came, and I was supposed to fight three more times. And so I fought Bernice White. He was 6'3", Marine champion. This guy was tough. I ended up beating him. So I beat him, and so there was four of us left, and the other guy didn't want to fight me. So I told Blinky, my brother-in-law, I said, he's going to fight Dana Goodson. Now, Dana Goodson's 245 pounds, 6'3", and he's the favorite. So I told my brother, if you don't stop him, you're not going to win. So you got to stop him, otherwise hurt him for me. And my brother-in-law, they didn't want to see they didn't want to see me and my brother-in-law fight. They wanted to see David and Goliath fight. They wanted to see. So Dana won. So I ended up fighting Dana for the championship. And I jumped in the ring. I was facing his chest, and I said, "Dang, this guy's tall." And so he thought I was going to run from him, but I ran right at him. And I mean, because I was a good judo man, so far, I mean, I picked him up, threw him. There was no rules whatsoever at all. And man, so everything went. So in the third round, I was getting tired. So I picked him up. I threw him, body slammed him. I jumped on top of him. I pinned him, and he started to roll me over. So I spit my mouthpiece off. I bit him in the chest, and he palmed my face off his head. And I got up, and when he got up, my teeth mark was on his chest, and he said, "You bit me." And I said, "I was getting tired." And so I ended up beating him. And so I took that championship, and I came home, and I told my brother, I said, "Brother, I earned the right to spar with Bruce Lee," and then he passed away. So that never happened. And so they were calling me, you know, the champion. I said, "Well, I haven't been outside of United States. How can I be the world champion?" So my brother, Arnold, and Howard Hanson started the WKA. And so he said, "You want to fight?" I said, "Yeah, you want to call me world champion? I want to fight outside." So they brought two Thai people, two Thai champions from Thailand, and they brought him in and said, "You want to fight Muay Thai?" I said, "Yeah, I'll fight him." Honest to God, I thought that was his name. I said, "Yeah, all right, no problem." I said, "I'll fight him." And so the Ernest Hart, I think, fought the first guy, and Ernest was beating him, and then I think in the third round, he got stopped, you know. And so then my turn was coming up. So I was the main event. I came out, and he was doing the prayer. I'd never seen that before in my life. So I'm in the corner, and I'm kind of just moving to his music, and the Thai people think I'm making fun of him. But I've never seen that. I'm just moving to the music. And so this guy came and simulating shooting an arrow at me, and I smiled and put thumbs up. And this guy's eyes were red. He was pissed. The bell rang. He came, and he kicked me in the thigh. You ever see those dolls you squeeze and the eyes pop out? Oh, my God, that hurt it so bad. I mean, right. I've had Charlie horses before, but I've never had anybody try to break my legs. And so I ended up, in the ninth, in the ninth round, they stopped it. They stopped it because the riot started. The Thais and the Americans, they, you know, the Thais thought I was cheating because I was throwing them, and the Americans thought he was cheating because he was elbowing me and kneeing me and clinching me. I never saw that before, and even none of the Americans saw that before. And so in that, I told my brother, hey, after I took the title, I told my brother, now. And by then, Bruce Lee passed away. But that was my inspiration. Okay? And in the 60s, remember, there was no gloves. There was no rules. There was no, you know, there was only three weight divisions, light, middle, and heavy. And there we were fighting and throwing, knocking each other down on concrete and hardwood floors and stuff. But you know what? We'd get up, we'd be bleeding, and we'd be bowing, paying respect to each other, because there was a Bushido way. It means there was a code of honor between warriors back in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
And then
right.
It changed.
Well, right.
So,
well, you know, that's most people, they don't have an idea of what we went through. This is what I call that makes it the historical part. It's not all the glory, and it's not all the safety gear that we have now. It's not all the rights that we have now, all the things that we can do now, and everything is perfect. You go to the U.S. Open or the Bal of Atlanta, you know, you got nice hotels to stay in. No, it's a whole different time, because that was an era that really, in most cases, people didn't know what they were doing. They were in the creative stage. Would you say that's right?
You know what? At that time, there was the Bushido way back then. There was a code of honor between warriors back in the 60s and early 70s. There was a code of war. And then there was a breakup. And when kickboxing started, and the word kickboxing was born in 75, because everybody kept on saying, what's full contact karate? Like you're kicking and then you're using your hands, or you're boxing and using your legs. Kickboxing was born in 75. And I wrote a book. I wrote a book in 77, 78 to actually teach people around the world. So I started traveling around the world giving this book so we can actually make Olympics. That wasn't my intention, to have Olympic sport out of it. My intention was to be able to teach them kickboxing. See, kickboxing was new, so I had to go around to different countries to introduce it. Muay Thai was very popular in the Orient. Muay Thai was very big. And I never knew that, but I wear long pants. I wear gi bottoms. And so when I was in Japan in 75, 76, they're saying, you have to wear shorts. I said, no, I'm a martial artist. I'm a traditionist. I wear gi bottoms. And they said, no, you have to wear shorts. I said, then I'm not fighting. That's it. I'm not going to fight. I wear gi bottoms. So they thought I was going to get knocked out anyway. And I fought Suzuki, and I knocked him out, and the champion. And I took their title from them. I was the first American to go in there and take their title from them, and they didn't like that at all. And so they brought me back within 2 months. And then I ended up fighting Okawa, and he was the champion, undefeated champion, and he came out of retirement to fight me. And I didn't see him, but when we jumped in the ring, I told my brother, wow, brother, look at, man, he's got mountain goat's legs. Look at those legs, how big they are. I said, he can't be 140, 145. But I said, this guy, look at those legs. I said, one of his legs is 145 pounds, man. Forget the rest. But anyway, I ended up stopping him in the fourth round, and the rest is history. I started introducing the sport of kickboxing around the world and trying and giving them, you know, because without, you know, you need some type of something to follow, you know. And so I made a curriculum so people can follow it, and that way they can create their own. But it was at least a foundation of how to begin kickboxing. And then I opened up the Jet Center in 80, which was the biggest fighting gym. I had professional boxers. I had, kickboxers come from. I had dormitories, blue point, restaurants. It was truly the state of the art I was just ahead of my time, and the rest just kept on going. Actually, the State Athletic Commission did not come into the fight game until 86. Then they came in because they saw it was taking off and there was a lot of money into it. And they said, hey, well, we want our share. That's when they started creating all these different weight divisions and so forth.
Wow. Wow. That is so powerful of, you know, going back. And you use the term before your time. And that really means that, you know, your creative thinking, what you were foreseeing in the future, others had not arrived there, and you're already at this next stage of the game. So tell us, you know, from what do you think out of that experience? What is your takeaway from that now? All the years of being involved in the martial arts, having your family involved in the martial arts. If you would have to sort of sum it up, what would you be your takeaway experience? What does that mean to you now?
You know, right from the biblical days, it was about honor. Honor your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters. Honor. And in the art, that was the foundation of the art, about honor. Honor your teachers. Honor your family. Honor your parents. You know, I was always grateful. My mother always was telling me, be thankful when your opponent comes in front or up on the scale. Look at him and be thankful he's there, that you can do the things you love doing. So I was always thankful my opponent showed up on the scale. When he got on the scale, I was so honored and thankful that I get a chance to do what I love doing. So the martial arts kept honor, hey, in our soul. And so in that, when we competed, we went out there and we were going to the knockout. But when it was over with, it was over with. We helped each other. Every one of my opponents, I offered to go and have dinner with them, you know, and talk about the fight and see if I can help him in his next fight and whatever he's doing. And so some of them took the offer, and a lot of them flipped me off. They were, you know, they just wanted nothing to do with it. So, but to me, it was about honor anyway. And the art really taught a way of life. It not only taught you respect, It taught you, and the honor was already right from the get-go. That was the foundation. But the respect and the discipline and learning how to deal with your emotions under pressure and learning to defend. And it was about defending, defending your mind, defending your body, defending your soul, defending your family. It was about defending. And in the defense, hey, it was the most important, as my mother was saying, learn how to defend before you learn to strike. And I said, "What? I don't understand that." She said, learn how to talk your way and beat your opponent verbally and talk your way out of it. Hey? And then, obviously, spiritually, recognize what's in front of you. If this person here really wants to hurt you no matter what you say, I said, it's a spiritual understanding of that energy. And then physically, if you defend yourself, then you need to stop your opponent so he doesn't come back. And one time I got in a fight because of this. It was something simple. His girlfriend was there, this and that. And so his girlfriend said something to him. And so he had no way to back out. And so what happens is, so I put him down real quick, and I looked at his friends, and I told his friends, when your friend gets up, tell him to think about what he's doing. And I walked away feeling bad. I didn't feel good about it. I felt bad that I did that in front of his girlfriend and took his manhood, made him feel small, and I didn't give him a way out. And so the next day, I heard that he came with his father's gun. So I went looking for him, and I saw him go in the bathroom. I went in there, and I said, "So here I am," And he started to cry, and he said, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "Why didn't you just hurt me, put me in the hospital, do whatever?" He said, "Why did you do that?" And it was the biggest lesson I've ever learned. And I just waved my hand down at him. I turned around, walked away, and I had a tear in my eye. And I said, "Wow, I felt bad." And so I saw him at lunchtime with him and his girlfriend and his friends. And I walked up to him, and his friends all put it down. And his girlfriend said, "We don't want no problem." And I looked at her and I said, "Your boyfriend's more of a man than I'll ever be. This guy is my hero, And I told his friends, "You should be proud to be his friend." I said, "This guy has more strength and power than I would ever have." And I said, "I apologize for what I did." And I walked away, and I felt victoriously. I felt so great. And I thought, that's what the art did for me. The art not only humbled me, but showed me that, you know what? It's not about that. It's not about being tough and hurting people. It's about being able to help people, to be a solution in their life. And that's where I always thought. So what I thought at the age of 14, I was always a better teacher than a fighter. I always thought that since I was 14. The fighting is something I can do. The teaching I love doing. To this day, I still love teaching.
Wow. So what about, let's move on into your movie career, because I know that you did a lot of movies, and this year, thinking about movies and television shows, we're going to be honoring Grandmaster Chuck Norris at our event. You two guys are our selected martial artists of giving back, and that's sort of what we're titling it, is the martial artists that have been giving back in there. So let's talk about, how did you get involved in the movies?
Well, matter of fact, one of my students was an actor, and he asked me to come on the set. He said, "Come on the set and watch me." And I said, "Sure. I've never been on the set." I said, "I'll go on the set." So I get there. He didn't tell me anything, so I have no idea what the protocol is and stuff like that. So the first thing I did is I got to a point where I started to – I'm sorry, that phone, let me jump out, okay?
And
so,
I
went on the set, and I was in front of the camera because I didn't know where to go, and the director said, "You, move over there." And so I moved over there, and he said, "Go work with him and do something, some kind of fight." And I said, yeah, okay. I said, yeah, if you want me to do this. So I put a fight together scene between him and I. And then the came and said, what are you doing? I said, well, that guy told me to do something with him in front of the camera. He says, that's the director. I said, and? I said, I don't know. You know, what does that mean? And so so he said, look it. He said, do it. I said, so I did. I went up there, and then the guys came up there. Came up to me and said, you know what? I'll see you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Be here sharp. This and that. I said, what for? He said, what do you mean what for? You, the director wants you to be here at 5 o'clock in the morning and such and such. So I told my student, and he said, you're on. I said, I'm on what? He said, you're in the movie. I said, how can I be in the movie? I didn't do anything. He says, whatever you did out there, he liked. And so next thing I know, I was in the movie, and then he started giving me lines. And he must have thought I was an actor or something, because he says, say this. This is what I want you to say, this and this and this. And I said, okay. And I'm good when it does the demonstrations. I was very good at it anyway. And so because I was doing live demonstrations and so forth. So to me, it was just a demonstration. I didn't. You know, I was very good at dealing with people's emotions and so forth. And next year, that was my first movie, and they were, and that one was called Down the Drain. And then Force 5 came out, and they, you know, so there was five of us on Force 5. We all co-starred on it, Joe Lewis and, you know, Bang Soo-hyung, and there was Richard Norton and myself. And, I mean, it was, you know, it was great. And so I ended up co-starring in that, and the rest was history. It just... They assumed that, you know, I knew what I was doing when it came to acting. But you know what? I think life is about that anyway. You know, you have a little bit of showmanship. You have a little bit of acting. Sometimes we a little bit of exaggeration. And I just know how to tap into people's emotions and tap into energy. So I think that it was very easy for me. And then my fight started. So when I wasn't fighting, I was actually doing movies back and forth, you know, and I turned down a lot of movies because I was getting ready to fight. And some of the producers got very angry at me and said, you will turn this down, you know. And I said, well, I have a fight, and that's very important to me. And they said, oh, yeah, well, we won't hire you no more. And I said, well, to me, the art was more important, because to me, it was a way of life. It was just what I do. So that's how I got into the movie industry. One thing led to another, and they kind of passed me around, you know, to, as they say, you're as good as your last movie. And so when I did the movie with Jackie Chan, I did three of them, and Meals on Wheels is the one everybody's still to this day trying to copy in the film industry, all the stunt guys and the actors trying to, you know, trying to make a movie, I mean, trying to make a fight as we did with Jackie Chan and I, and we changed the way people fight on in the movie industry. And then with John Cusack, you know, he's been my student for about 30 years. And so we had no problem. I mean, when it came to, I mean, John had no problem striking me, and he's, you know, 6'4" and I'm only 5'6" and he hit me with a sidekick on top of my chest. My legs flipped up. I hit on concrete, and we went on, and because John knew that I can take the shots, you know, but and John knew that I had great, you know, great control as well. So people look and talk about, I mean, I've done a lot of other movies, but those are the two that people talk about to this day. They talk about Meals on Wheels, and they talk about, you know, Gross Point Blank, you know. Those are the two that most people talk about, even though I've done about maybe 50 films, you know, in there. But those are the ones that everybody talk about, and it's really true. You're as good as your last film.
Wow. Well, I know you've written, you know, quite a few books and things like that. So, you know, let's talk about that part of, you know, having a system, because you were doing this early when you were putting your books out, trying to get people to learn about kickboxing, right, so you could build a sport. So let's talk about, you know, because I get a lot of calls on, about becoming an author, and people, I have to sort of help them find the reason that they want to become an author. And it sounded like, you know, that you were, your one of your earlier books when you were doing it was to not necessarily to make money, but as a training tool to help people learn about what you were doing, how you were doing it to promote the sport.
Right. I've done 6 books, but the first book was actually in 78, and now that book is around the world. People, even when it was under dictatorship of countries, everything, they were training underground, and they had my book and my videos, and that's how they learned, you know, in Russia and I mean, everywhere. Every third world country, they were learning underground with my book. So my first book was a foundation of kickboxing, how to build yourself as a warrior, you know. And so so when I went around, everybody has that book, my first book. And then the second book I wrote, it was about how to use your tools in the dojo, which to me is the temple. And the temple is when you walk into the doorway of knowledge, you're walking in there to learn knowledge about you. So I call that the temple. And in it, you know, in that temple, hey, all the good, bad, and ugly shows up, and you get a chance to mirror yourself, hey, in that. So the book, hey, the book, I said, okay, I wrote the book on how to build yourself as a warrior, but how to use the tools, I wrote another book, and how to use the bag. You know, I developed the bags, the power shield, all that back in 73. I developed all those because when I was training, man, I would kick shit on shit. Oh, that hurt it so bad. And so I went to a shoe shop and I asked them that I want to protect my knees. So that's how I started designing shin guards. And then I got tired of trying to tie my because boxing gloves had shoelaces, and I couldn't by myself. So I went to the shoe shop and I had them put Velcro. And then I had this one guy out of his garage was making my gloves and shin guards with Velcro. And so in that, I knew what you needed to train. So I wrote a book on all the equipment. I designed the 6-foot bags. I designed the 8-foot bags. Why? For target area. Because back then it was a 4-foot bag from boxing, you know, and the leather bags. That was the main tool they had. So I started designing bags that were longer so I can go to the calf, to the thigh, to the body, to the head. And so that's why I made them. And then I designed different bags for different rhythms. And so I had the jab bag, the rhythm bag, the timing bag, the uppercut bag, the elbows and knee bag, and on and on and on. I made these different bags for different rhythms of your body. So I taught people how to actually build your body for warfare, okay? Whether it be mental warfare, physical warfare, spiritual warfare. But that was the second book. And then I wrote another book. So the books, it was kind of advanced building people into the sport, because in the art, the martial arts was a way of life. In the sport, because you had people in the arts, they liked the excessive contact. They liked that really excessive contact. So I said, okay, so now you like excessive contact, go into the sport of it, go into the kickboxing part of it. That's for excessive people that like the excessive contact. Because to me, the ring, I call the square jungle, because that was about therapy. So I used the ring for therapy. When people got in there, everything you hid under your bed, in your closet, came out when you're threatened. And so in the ring, you were threatened constantly. And so all the emotions came up, and I had a chance to reprogram that. You don't like the way you feel? Change the way you think. That's what I've done. So I used the ring as therapy. So anyway, that's how I got into and so then I started teaching for Lee Strasberg the word, stunt acting, that were stuntmen learning that had acting ability to make the opposite look real. and I got actors to do stunt work enough to where it would be them, because a lot of them were saying, no, I want to do it. I don't want my stunt double to do it. I want to do it. And so I started teaching them how to picture fight and so forth so they can do their own stuff as long as it wasn't car hits or fire burns or, you know, drop from building stuff. But ground stuff, I taught them that they can do their own stuff. And that way they can say, hey, that was me doing it. That wasn't my stunt double. So so I took the fight from the ring to the screen on the Lee Strasberg Academy.
So I know that you still – you got a lot of things going on. I know you have a seminar that's coming up shortly. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about that? How can they get involved with it, or any other things that you have that's coming up that our audience definitely would like to follow you and participate in the things you're doing?
Beautiful. You know, April 17th and 19th, Sensei Fari Boris and myself, we're actually doing a three-day seminar, and what this is about, the reason why three-day seminar, because the first day is we're building foundation. We do a lot of meditation because, again, if I ask you, where do you get your power from? I asked 700 people, not 700 black belts, not where they are people, but 700 black belts. I said, raise your hand if you know where you get your power from. Four raised their hand out of 700. And I said, where do you get your power from? He says, chi power. I get it from chi power, you know, from inside. And I said, okay, so how do you receive it? And he says, well, I just do it. I said, but how do you receive that power? You just say, power, come forward, and it comes forward? He says, no, I mean, I use breath. I said, so you say, you breathe, and he said, yeah. With breath, I can break bricks and boards. Okay. So the next one, I said, where do you get your power from? And he said, from God. I said, so how do you access it? Do you have to go to church? Or you say, God, give me power, and you get it? And he said, well, no, not like that. I said, well, I'm asking you, like what? How do you receive your power? And he couldn't answer me. So the third one said, like, I said, where do you get your power? He said, yeah, like a little bit of what he said and a little bit about what he said. I said, but what do you say? He said, yeah, like what they say. I said, thank you. Thank you very much. And the third one, he started laughing. I mean, the fourth one started laughing. And he said, you know what? I'm powerful, but nobody ever asked me that question. Where do I get my power from? Now, listening to them, I thought, okay, that is external. That's a physical power. But how about an internal power? And so in this, That's why, to me, it's so important that, you know, you understand what the art does for you. It mirrors your truth. You get a chance to really look at yourself and you mirror your truth. And that's why to this day, I'm still a martial artist. Okay? Everybody knows me for kickboxing, but I said, you know, is a kickboxing is something I can do. I'm not my resume. Yes, I did all that, but that's not who I am. I'm an internal power person. Okay? I'm not about a solution. I'm not about an idea. I'm about a solution. And in the solution, whether it be mental, physical, spiritually, when we get stuck. And that's why my journey with all the equipment I designed to build the power to your potential. These kids right now, it's incredible what they can do. I mean, they're going way beyond that, you know, that I can ever do back in the 67. I'm looking at these kids, I say, wow. So the tools that we give them, the knowledge that we give them, they're taking it and going way beyond, you know, that what we've been to back then. Hey, but you know what they're missing? They're missing the prosciutto concept. It's like, what have you done for me lately? You know, they're missing not the discipline, they're missing the prosciutto understanding of the not only the respect, but there's the honor system. They're missing that this generation because of their phones and everything. You know, it's like my son had his friend over here, and they were next to each other. And I said, "So what are you guys doing?" He says, "Oh, we're texting." I said, "Who?" He says, "Well, I'm texting him. He's texting." I said, "Well, turn that phone off, look at him, and talk to him." And he said, "I am." I said, "No, you're not. Put the phone down, turn around, and talk to him." I realized that even my son and my, you know, they're losing the communication, and so they're not able to express themselves as they did back then, and they're not playing out there and being creative as they used to. So everything is kind of shutting down, and the art, that's why the art is so important, because it takes you back to the roots, takes you back to the beginning. And reminds you, you know, when you're on this table, put that phone away. When you're training, I don't want your phone on the mat. You know, I see some of these guys that they're training. I do some seminars, and they had their phones. And I tell everybody, if you have phones, turn them off. Okay? Otherwise, leave mm-hmm. the seminar. And so it's just the way of right now. This is a jet age. Everybody's on communication and frequencies and so forth. And that's what I found to this day. Even when I'm doing, you know, it doesn't matter when I'm teaching, when I'm doing seminars, when I'm doing lectures, everybody has their phone. Some are using phones taking pictures. Some are using phones to listen to me as a tape recorder. Some are using phones, you know, talking to one another. And I just tell everybody, you know, turn your phones off. And I spend
right.
more
That's
time
good.
Telling
That's
them to turn
good.
The phones off than actually teaching.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, this has been great, sir. I really do appreciate the opportunity to share with our listeners your story, your background, and all of these things are important. Everyone, you know, what we try to do, whether it's with Karen Eadman, her show, with my show, Professor Gary Lee, you know, it's really about spirituality. It's about history. It's about bringing truth and understanding of who we are, and that we don't get lost in technology. That the thing about you that's important, the thing about leadership is important, and that we are constantly evolving and learning. And see, the problem comes is when we stop learning and stop learning how to communicate with this generation that we have. So we have to be able to put them in a place that they can understand what we're saying. We have to learn to be better leaders and communicators so that we can understand where they're coming from. So this is this whole thing about this historical thing, is your impact on society. How many people are you influencing? You know, I remember, again, going back into the 70s of, you know, watching Benny. You know, my story is of an image of first day I started the martial arts class. I had never seen a martial arts magazine. I go into a convenience store, and as I'm walking out, there is a karate magazine. And I pick it up. I purchased it, and I'm started. When on the inside cover, there's a picture of Grandmaster Norris, and he has this a little old lady is him in his gi. He has his foot up in a folding chair. He has this huge trophy cup on his thigh, and that was my very first image. I knew at that moment I wanted to be a karate champion. I never won anything in my life, but that image of Chuck Norris holding that award, that trophy, that triggered something inside of me. And, you know, that's what we're talking about. When we are builders of an image as martial arts instructors, the question that you ask is, how many people are we empowering and making their lives better because of the image that we portray? And this is what the book is about. So Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers is about a motivational book sharing why you got involved in the martial arts and how has the martial arts impacted your life. Because when we can share our stories of places that we've been, that we've had to struggle from, but we've moved from that, then when parents read our stories or when someone else reads our story,
that they may be going through the same thing that we went through, then they may, you know, they may decide to go out and find a good martial arts teacher. And if you understand that the martial arts is more than just a physical kick and punch, it's about a life skill. It's about helping someone to understand themselves. You know, the punching, the kicking, the striking, that those are the tools that we that brings us together physically and spiritually and mentally. You know, this is a martial arts is a great visual tool to teach creativity, to do kata, to do form, to see it, to become a part of that, to experience it on its highest level. So these are things that we're talking about we want to share. So, you know, if you're a martial artist and you have a story, and that story, and again, what I found with the book, as people begin to write about themselves, they have a moment in time to stop and do an assessment, to do an evaluation. What have I done with my life? What can I do with my life? Some people can write a paragraph and that's it. Then others can sit and write a whole complete book, and they've got enough of five or six books to talk about their life and their martial arts experience and how they have become one. So bringing awareness to that. So in Vegas, we want to pay tribute to our martial arts pioneers. You know, last year, you know, Stephen Hayes, the year before that, you know, we had another great martial artist. So every year, going all the way back when we first honored my teacher, Grandmaster Jan Wellendorf, in 2015. And this book wasn't designed to be what it is today. But that's the thing about God. That's the thing about doing something positive. And when you can do it from a spiritual place, from a place of truth, then things can happen, things can grow. So we're going to be in Las Vegas. This is going to be June the 26th and 27th. You know, go to our website, which is www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com. You can email me at amaawhoswho@gmail.com. You can give me a call at area code 919-618-8075. And you have a question, we are looking. We want this to be in a very super event. We have great people, Grandmaster Joe Corley, Jeff Smith, and that list goes on and on. That's going to be there. You know, Benny's going to be one of our speakers. Mr. Corley's going to be one of our speakers. And Mr. Smith, he's going to be one of our speakers. We've got a tournament going on. We have business. Toby Milroy is doing a business seminar. So we just have a whole lot of really incredible things that's happening. We want everyone to come out and be a part of us in Las Vegas. Again, that's June the 26th and the 27th. So how would someone, if someone wanted to get in contact with you for information, do a seminar, how would they get in contact with you?
Well, they can go on my website, BennyJett.com, and, you know, it's actually my website would probably be the best bet because on there it has different categories of what you might want, and it talks about whatever it is that you're looking for, these subjects on there, whether it be seminars or, you know, wanting to learn how to picture fight or, you know, learning how to meditate, learning how to, you know, actually begin to go into the art or getting into the sport of it. And so to me, you know, just to tap into, to me, there's always three different type of teachers. You have trainers, you know, and to me, not all trainers, but a lot of trainers, you know, they're like car salesmen to me because they sell it, but they're not really teaching it. They're just selling it. And then you have coaches that go on a curriculum and they stay with the curriculum. And you say, well, what about this? No. We're just saying this is, they stay with the curriculum. And they don't get creative with it. And then you got teachers that will teach you about you. The inner, the outer, and the middle ways will mirror your truth. When you find those, you want to hang on to those mentors that actually teach about you. Hey, because there's a lot of them out there. All you have to do is really look for them. Look for them, and they really talk about you. They turn you inside out, mirror your truth, and you get a chance to really understand your journey, because this journey is like a roller coaster ride of emotions, up and down. And if you understand how to heal those as you go along, and, you know, I say stay with that teacher, because he's there for you, and it's all about you. It's not about the money. It's not about anything else. It's about you. So make this about you, and make your journey about you, that you can do this for the love of it, that you may pass that love to somebody else.
Wow. Well, that is great, sir. Thank you again for being on our show today. Everyone, a lot of great information. Check out his books. You can go to his website. Check out YouTube videos. Now, I'm hoping this call is a motivational call for you to, go back and see what some of the great founders of, kickboxing, such as Benny, and the things he's done in the martial arts, because this is what you want to do. It's a journey from the day you're born until the day that, God calls you home. It's a journey. And when you look at your journey, what have you done? So you don't have to, dwell on that, but just understand that, you're here for a purpose. And, your purpose is, maybe not just to be a teacher, but to be a great teacher. Then you can turn the results out that you turn out great students. And not only do you turn out great students, you turn out great people. Everyone, this is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen. Listen, hey, thank you for being on our show today. And again, we've got so many amazing things going on. And again, sir, thank you for being here. Anytime that we can do anything to support you or do anything for you, hey, please let us know.
I appreciate that, Jesse Brown. And like I said, I have some things I didn't want to talk about, but coming to your neighborhood soon, I will be loud with it.
All right, don't worry, sir. Vegas is coming up, and we're not going to keep anything in Vegas, so we're going to let you just go forward. We're going to be taking it back to our cities, our states, and hey, we're going to be having some fun.
Beautiful.
All right, sir.
I look forward
everyone,
to that.
Yes, sir. Be blessed, everyone.
All right, man.